Morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting now come to order. It'd be a good time if anybody has any cell phones or other devices that might make noise. We're going to silence them now. And if you all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Move along now to item number three. This is discussion and possible action, approval of the agenda for this date, February the 17th, 2015. Does anyone have any questions or discussion on today's agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion of approval.
I move to approve the agenda.
I'll second that motion.
Moving second to approve today's agenda for February the 17th, 2015. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Moving along now to item number four, discussion, possible action, approval of the minutes for January the 5th of 2015. Any discussion on those minutes of January the 5th? Hearing none, call for a motion of approval.
I move to approve the minutes for January 5th, 2015.
Second.
Moved and second. Approve the minutes for January the 5th, 2015. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Moving along now, next up is the consent agenda. Does anyone have any questions regarding the consent agenda? Hearing none at this time, call for a motion for approval of today's consent agenda.
I would move to approve the consent agenda for today.
Moving to second for approval of today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. All right. Moving along now is item number nine. This is discussion. We won't take any action on this. We will take testimony. This is a presentation and discussion by Nevada Department of Transportation officials and Comstock Mining, LLC, regarding physical conditions, structural integrity, and other conditions of State Route 342. Adjacent to the Lucerne Pit in Southern Gold Hills, Story County, Nevada. Okay, does the Department of Transportation want to start this off today?
Four, would that be acceptable to you, or just Comstock Mining?
Doesn't matter. My question, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Right. As you approach the podium, if you'll identify yourself for the record, so the clerk will know.
Scott Jolkover, Director of Business Development for Comstock Mining.
For the record, Ken Joy, Project Manager for Comstock Mining. So the location of the shaft in question on SR 342 is about in close proximity to the 0.5 mile post marker, and the road shown on this plan is SR 342 in its current alignment. So its first production was between 1873 and 79, and it produced a record of about 13,000 tons. Later produced 19 to 42. The shaft covered by dump material in 1942. So I'll explain that in further slides, but essentially what that means is that the dump material that was removed from the shaft is actually what the roadbed is constructed on. It moved from its original alignment to present alignment position over the shaft around 1946. The vertical shaft that the road runs over is approximately 350 feet deep, and from the bottom of that shaft extends the decline. The decline is shown as that hash mark up, there it is, kind of extends to the east from the shaft. So through some history and research that we've done, there's community knowledge of five past events or so related to this shaft. In 1965, we have a photo that's after this slide showing the collapse. 1986 was after a heavy rain event. There were some issues. 1987 was a collapse. 97, New Year's Day flood. 2000, 2006, and most recently, February 8th and 9th, we monitored some cracks. This is a photo from 1965. At the bottom of the photo, it's very hard to see in this black and white photo, but that is the edge of the asphalt in the bottom. This one is from the 1987 collapse. Two additional caving events occurred along Highway 342 and caused it to be closed for several weeks for repairs. The first occurred around 2000, the second around 2006 along the state route for about a quarter mile. Both events were as a result of floodwaters. So this is a cross section, kind of a generic cross section of what we, as best we could illustrate what we have out there. So the dark black line kind of in the middle of the shaft indicates the layer of bedrock. We know that from our mining operations in the pit. Everything above that is loose, unconsolidated dump material that was removed from the shaft that the road is actually constructed on. There's some remediation work that we did on the slope last week, Thursday and Friday. I think it was before the event, in anticipation of it. We removed some overburden material, put a berm. I'll elaborate on that in further slides. The kind of colored lines over there are where we know that they're drill holes for us. We know that's how we found the bedrock layer and the dump fill stuff. In the next slide is kind of a generic geologic cross section that illustrates above that dump material, kind of the fixed cave-in over the years, and most importantly, maybe the rock fabric, if you will. It's kind of dipping to the east, which is, just a point to make about the structural stability of the rock itself. If it were leaning the other way, it would be maybe problematic, but it's dipping to the east. Here's some of the pictures from the 2006 repair with NDOT. And I don't know much about it other than the pictures that we've been provided, but I can just kind of run through the repairs that were made. So here is the bottom. It's our understanding that this is the bottom of the excavation. It's kind of hard to see in the photo. The shaft is below it. And the depth there is, from looking at it, it would probably be around 20 feet, which is maybe halfway or so, maybe a little further to the depth of the bedrock. F-rail or old K-rail was installed across the top of it and then was covered with material. And then they bridged it or with some non-woven geotextile fabric before they brought it all the way up to the surface. For our current monitoring, what we're doing is we have 26 points, and we're adding more. We are monitoring them daily, which are the blue dots with numbers and point numbers on them. The location of the shaft is that maybe just north of where that blue call-out is, and the discoloration of the pavement, which is probably hard to see up there, but yes, yeah, in that general vicinity. The red lines are the cracks that we have observed and surveyed and are monitoring. They reflect maybe a curvilinear pattern that indicates some settlement of the shaft, particularly the ones just east of it, kind of extend outward in a radius of maybe where the center of the shaft would be. So this is our survey points and monitoring points just illustrated over the top of the underground workings, and they kind of extend, radial outwards, as I explained, and then they march down in the direction of the decline. What we know is that there was an elevation change. It dropped approximately half an inch over 15 days between January 19th and February 3rd. The elevation change showed minimal movement after January 28th. And we believe that that was due to that little bit of snow event that we had around that time. So we have been working with NDOT collaboratively for the mitigation work. They have deployed their crews to help crack fill, prevent any precipitation or runoff from entering into the roadway. So they filled maybe 2,000 feet of the cracks in that road. There was a portion of the wall right here that we removed and cast down into the pit to mitigate any form of tension cracks and such that we thought could be adding additional stress to the pavement. We did this work in anticipation of the latest rain event, and which was on February 8th and 9th. During that rain event, Sunday, there was a lot of runoff and precipitation that was coming down from Gold Hill, followed the roadway all the way down, and it actually started to infiltrate some of the cracks. It weren't visible until it started raining, and it was disappearing in these cracks, and it was probably in the neighborhood of, if I had to guess, 20 to 30, maybe 40 gallons a minute disappearing in these cracks. We inspected the pit high wall to make sure that none of the water and of the event was affecting or coming out in the wall, and it wasn't. It was disappearing to we don't know where. So as a mitigation measure during the event, what we did was line those areas where the cracks had developed, and they had developed on both the east and the west side of the road. The crack here is shown, you know, it's east looking to the south, so it's on the east side of the road. We lined the over the top of the cracks, and we got the surface runoff to run on top of the plastic and continue down Gold Canyon Creek rather than disappearing in the cracks. This is now, we have replaced this visqueen or plastic with a more substantial HDPE liner. What we are proposing is a realignment of SR-342. We're proposing to push it all the way against the hillside to get it off of both the unconsolidated material, the old dump material, and the shaft. It's shown in kind of the blue and yellow lines there. To do this work, we met last month, I guess, with you guys to discuss an accurate approach. To be able to perform this work, we still have to have access to be able to get over there. So some form of the at-grade crossing will be required for construction purposes and removal of the dumps containing, you know, environmentally sensitive material to facilitate sustainable alignment of Gold Canyon Creek. That's what I have for the presentation. Do you guys want to comment on anything?
If you go back a few clips.
Say when.
There.
Here.
The cracks. How old is this? Is this a new determination of the cracks, or is this ongoing over the years?
So these cracks, the red lines indicate the cracks that we noticed and surveyed and are currently monitoring and measuring.
As of when?
As of, that's a good question. Larry, can you comment on that? It's been a couple of months, right?
November. When we first noticed in November, and then they increased after the snow event.
Do you have any questions for Closer Plant? Okay, Ms. Dyson, you want to go ahead and...
Actually, I do have one. Back. Okay. What is the mouth width of the shaft that's under the road?
The shaft is 725 feet. 25 feet diameter.
Okay, now, if, I'm going to have to ask, if you're going to testify, I'm going to have you come up to the podium, because otherwise the, our sound system doesn't pick it all up.
So the diameter of the shaft is 25 feet, but as it fails, it causes a funnel effect such that the deeper it fails, the wider it is at the surface, would be the best explanation.
Go to the other.
Do we know what that width is today?
We do not.
On my process. Sir, could you please identify yourself?
Hi, I'm Larry Martin. I'm Director of Exploration, CPG, that's a certified professional geologist. This is a cross-section that I developed. The if you go to the slides that show the encroachment of the collapse in 65, that encroached maybe 5 or 6 feet into the pavement. The collapse in 87 that encroached, we estimate, 15 feet or so into the road. And then the 2006 collapse that went nearly, took out nearly the center line of the road. So each time this has collapsed, it has got larger. That's one thing that we observed from the photo record that we from looking up archives.
I'd be interested in having a width established on that today.
Width on
the diameter.
From what?
How large is the hole into the road? How large is the shaft today?
We don't know how big the hole could be underneath the road right now, no.
Can we find out?
With drills. You won't have today.
No, I understand. But when I say today, currently.
Yeah, I don't, I cannot say that we have cracks that are propagated on the east side that we've been measuring that have, they are 60 feet from the edge of the pavement, east of the pavement. That one is 60 feet east of the pavement. But I all I can tell you is that we have the highway, as people have been driving through that area, has noticed a dip of approximately 10 inches or so. I know people have noticed that. That's a depression we're talking about, but I cannot tell you at this time if we have a hole that is actually developed. The shaft is there. It's 40 feet below the surface. That's the fill. The fill is 40 feet thick. The shaft is open for 300 feet, as far as we know, down. I'll let NDOT describe their observations when they were there in 2006. But this is stuff that I'm telling you that we measured on the surface itself.
Thank you.
So thank you. My name is Thor Dyson. I'm the district engineer for the District 2 office for Nevada. With me I have from our laboratory, our materials section, Mr. Mike Griswold, and in the audience, Mr. Tony Angelopoulos with our permit section. So thanks. I want to say thank you very much to CMI for a very comprehensive PowerPoint. I've been in at NDOT for 25, pushing 26 years, and I've been familiar with this particular failure on State Route 342, particularly late December of 2005, early January of 2006. So one of our maintenance workers in a pretty horrific rainstorm slash snowstorm, a guy named Alfie Reif. Alfie works up here at Virginia City, has for quite some time. Happened to be driving, patrolling the road, that section, and some others for rocks and whatever. And he saw the sinkhole. He just drove right up on it and damn near drove right into it. So really, the grace of God was able to stop the vehicle and close the road, prevent any further injury or whatever, fatality accidents. This is quite a significant rainstorm. We had some pretty serious floods in Reno off the Truckee. That particular rain event caused that sinkhole, and it turned out to be the shaft. It was new to me. I didn't know at the time we had a shaft down in there, but I learned very quickly that that shaft had been there quite a long time and it had a history. And I personally went and looked at that sinkhole, and I can tell you that it was, you know, at the top portion, that diameter was over 40 feet because it kind of sloughed in. And then it kind of narrowed down in, and you could look several hundred feet down. And then talking to other folks, you know, just like CMI had mentioned it, then that shaft runs at an incline for quite a long way. So there was no way to fill up the hole, so to speak. So as a result, we closed the road. We did an emergency contract. We had a wide range of bids. I was involved with that. We had a number of contractors. And the one we ended up selecting was MKD Construction. A guy named Mike Rock and his company came up with a very clever way to bridge that hole. And as you saw the photos, which I believe are ours, we basically used old sticks of K-rail. I had some old sticks of K-rail. It's just basically barrier rail. We provided that to the contractor, and they bridged that hole and then filled it in. So got some history there with that initiative, at least as far as I'm concerned, my personal view of the mine shaft failing again during a rain event. And then later turned into snow, and as the photo indicated, we had snow after that rain. We had some dips prior to any mining activity with that mine shaft, associated with that mine shaft. We did some grinding and some additional paving after. I think it was, I want to say, around 2009 or 10. And then, you know, these recent events, working with the Comstock Mining Company, we were in close coordination and became aware of this rain event coming up. And so we worked in unison, and I basically authorized the District 2 maintenance personnel out of Virginia City, along with some other folks out of Reno, to help seal all the cracks in the roadway, because we're very concerned of the two large rain events, Friday night and Sunday, that the water would cause further instability. So we watched it closely. Prior to the first rain event, there was a lot of discussions whether we should close it or not. I elected not to. And we did really well with the mining company closing off cracks on the shoulder that were developing, as well as cracks in the asphalt. We took care of that. We kept filling up the cracks with crack filler, and it just was like a bottomless pit. So we put in some backer rod, bridged in those cracks. We wanted to keep water from going in. So pretty good team effort. Survived the first rainstorm. I think our cracks on the asphalt did quite well. However, the second rainstorm was quite a bit more intense. Just a week ago from yesterday, was quite the rainfall, and water was disappearing. So I got a phone call around 3-4 o'clock Sunday afternoon a week ago, and made the determination to close it. I couldn't, in good conscience. I didn't want to have someone that I know, like Alfie, potentially drive into that hole. So the decision was made to close the road. So from a technical, geotechnical standpoint, I can have Mike address some of the things that he's observed regarding that roadway, the mine shaft, and I want to make it very clear that NDOT does not own the road, the dirt material underneath. We do not have right-of-way or own the property to either the east or west. All NDOT has is a prescriptive right. We have a prescriptive right with the asphalt to maintain the road and to make sure that it's safe for the traveling public. We do not, like in typical roadways up on Mount Rose or I-80, we typically own the land from fence post to fence post, or if there's no fence post, a particular distance from the center line of the road on both sides. And that can vary, but on this case, we don't have that. It's a prescriptive right that we're there, and based on that, it's kind of different for me because I have to react differently to this particular road as I do to others. But we're going to make sure, and I need to make sure, and be in good conscience that to keep it safe. So the road was continued to, I kept it closed. I didn't have the confidence level that if there was another event, I kept it closed because of the cracking and the dip where the mine shaft is. And we had a traffic control developed by Comstock. We reviewed it, accepted it. And my permit staff, Mr. Tony Angelopoulos, worked very closely to develop a closure at this time with detours on 341 on the truck route. And I think that's pretty much what I have for now. I know we are going to work very closely with Comstock. If they want to move the road, we're fine with that. We definitely need to get Story County's input. We need to get any other regulatory agencies' clearances. We're happy to accommodate what Story County and CMI want to do as far as moving the road to a safer, more known location. So with that, if you want me, I can answer some questions, or I turn it over to Mr. Griswold and then can ask questions after.
Hold on first. Let me see if the commissioners would like to ask you some questions.
Sure.
The proposal to move it to the east up against the hill there, does that look like a feasible, long, permanent solution?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly much more so than where it's at right now, Commissioner.
Seems like we could all agree we need to do something. We've got a shaft under there that I understand was 1,200 feet deep when it was originally designed. But it looks to me like we need to arrive at something that's palatable for everybody and not continue to cross the shaft.
I concur with that as well, Commissioner Gilman. I think we're playing with fire I'm worried about the mine shaft. I'm worried about the whole caving in. You know, some projects are worth putting a Band-Aid on and you can make it work and not spend any additional time and effort and play around with safety. This isn't one of those. I think the time has come based on the series of events, the series of failures of the mine shaft. Certainly Comstock's in the area. They're doing their mining activity. They're blasting. But I can tell you that from just the asphalt, and that's what I'm looking at, it would be much more prudent to move it to solid ground. And Mr. Griswold can talk about that.
Did I understand that the majority of the cave-ins or the repairs over the past historical have been due to water events? Is that?
That I'm aware of, yes. Over the last 50, 60 years, the failures of that mine shaft have been related to stormwater events.
I think there's, in the Comstock, I'm aware of other issues that are similar, whereby a water runoff will find a drift, for example, and continue to erode that drift and disappear into the shafts below. And I'm aware of that happening in the past. So it appears that's something along those lines here on the highway.
I would agree with that. It appears that.
In your analysis down there, how far would you suggest that the shaft has settled once again, where the repair has already been made?
You know, I'm going to let Mr. Griswold answer that, but there's a dip when you drive it. It's pretty clear.
I'd almost suggest that there's been a dip there since the last time it was repaired. Now, I don't drive it every day. A lot of the Gold Hill Silver City residents drive it every day. But ever since the last time I remember it being repaired, there's always been a bump going through there. Because there's only such a, there's only so many feet. You're going to hit it, and then you're going to hit it going in, hit it going out. So, hey, go ahead. You want to?
Yeah.
Sure.
For the record, Mike Griswold, Chief Geotech Engineer for NDOT. I was involved in that 2006 repair. I was called up on New Year's Day, took the photos that Ken had presented and been shown in the articles. One of the things that I noticed when I came up is that a lot of sloughing had already come into the hole. So when I looked down the shaft, a lot of material had gone in, a lot of big chunks of asphalt, and I think it kind of blocked and bridged the upper part of that shaft. So when I got there, you couldn't look straight down 300 feet or so. It kind of been folded in and bridged over. But what I did notice is that the shaft size, you know, because everything was seeping and oozing in, but that shaft size was not a full 25-foot diameter that I saw down at the bottom. It was much closer to about 8-foot diameter. And when we started excavating and doing the repairs, we did pull up some of the old timbers and beams that had been used to plug that hole previously. And I don't know which repair event that was. Mike Donovan was on site with us and giving us some guidance at that time about his recollections of previous repairs. But knowing that we've got a shaft that's was constructed at 25-foot diameter, my concern is and has been that we only had a collapse of a portion of that shaft. Those beams were rotted, and we believe with the water event and saturation, those rotted beams collapsed in the hole. But my concern is that some portion of that shaft was still bridged over, and when we did our K-rail repair with rock, we only fixed a certain portion of that. What you see today out there in that dip, from our records, that dip started showing up about 2 years after we repaired it in 2006. We put together some survey monitoring points, and we're watching that settlement. I believe that settlement was about 3 inches and occurred over about an 18-month period, if I'm not mistaken, and kind of stabilized. That settlement is just to the south side of where we repaired that pit. It's not directly over what we repaired in 2006. My real fear is that the second portion, that shaft, is starting to collapse. What we've noticed, the mine has been monitoring it and presented information showing that it was, again, moving, and I think everybody that drives it, you know, it's quite noticeable. I don't know the total settlement that we have seen, but it is certainly a major concern, and to me, it's major concern that we've got another portion of that shaft collapsing. The pictures that you saw, you know, at the surface reflected up to, I think it was a cross diameter of close to 40 feet. That was all out of what I observed as an 8-foot diameter hole in the ground. If the other portion of this 25-foot diameter shaft were to open up, you know, that section could again reflect up in a funnel cone shape to the surface and be quite large. So maybe a little more detail than you were looking for, but answer your questions?
Would it be more, I don't know, I'm just asking, would it be more feasible maybe to build a ground-level bridge over that versus rerouting the whole?
Well, from a technical standpoint, just being an engineer, when you've got 40 feet of uncontrolled fill, essentially mine tailings, We have no idea what's under that ground. We have no idea what the miners did in the old days. We have no idea what they did to construct that road. It's very difficult to enact repairs that you can be reasonably assured will be successful, because every time you go in there and try to do something, it's an unknown. It's a very attractive solution to move that road to a known material. Essentially, you move it over to the other side, to the east, and you're into bedrock, and if you need to do a cut-fill situation, you do a controlled compacted lifts of fill, and you know what you have underneath there. It's very difficult and very expensive to try and repair a situation like we have there. So, doing a viaduct structure, those are extremely expensive. You could put drilled shafts down to the bedrock and essentially build a bridge over it, but really from, a monetary standpoint, that's much more difficult task than moving the road over, and probably longer construction. Well, I would definitely say longer construction time.
So we're confident if we move the road to the east that we have roadbed that does not interact at all with the mining or the shaft or anything. So,
well, this is a conceptual plan, and maybe Ken can step in and discuss that.
For the record, Ken with Comstock, we have began work with three different firms, so Stantec, RCI for the geotechnical stability portion of it, and Ken Dorr, who used to be with Manhard. We're in the process of designing the realignment of the road. I have received a first rendition of the realignment from our consultants this morning. I have not had time to review it, but we are in the process. We are moving forward on this as fast as we can.
Mr. Joy, moving, if we were to go ahead, if you decide to move this highway to the east, how does that affect future mining operations that I thought was in the plans of moving to the east side of the highway?
It has a significant impact on the mining operations, such that the last slide in my presentation, access is a big deal. By that I mean, logistically, we are having issues getting deliveries to the mine, so our cyanide, our cement, our zinc, our heavy equipment, fuel, none of it can come through Grinder's Bend, so it's all got to come up from the bottom. And thankfully, so far to date, everything's held up with the bypass that we've installed around the affected area by the shaft. Furthermore, the portion that we had planned on mining next, we would like to still pursue that option, but we have to come to some agreement with NDOT and yourselves before
actually,
we could...
That's actually what I was leading into.
I see.
Future mining operations on that side of the highway.
Yeah, so it's a construction mining sequencing phase that we would essentially mine the old dump material furthest on the east, and then, as Mike said, construct some sort of roadbed embankment in the bedrock, partially in, maybe partially not, that's structurally sound to put the road on. Once that access is developed, then we could fulfill our obligation in removing the rest of the dump material. Does that help?
Yeah. Mr. Dyson, can I ask you another question? When you talk about your prescriptive right to the highway, is that all of 342? Is that...
Yes, I believe it is. I believe it's the entire, certainly from Silver City all the way up, but
all the way up to the Fourth Ward School, basically.
I believe so.
That whole site.
I'd have to look at the right-of-way documents with our right-of-way division to determine that, but yes.
Okay, because you spoke earlier about how the water's going into the cracks and disappearing, and that we had an event like that happened on D Street down here several years ago in front of Gallagher Elementary School there, and the middle of the road opened up too, caused by a water event, not by natural causes, but because a contractor forgot to glue the PVC pipe together. Because these mine shafts around here were filled by throwing in old cars and a bunch of dirt, packing it down, and throwing some asphalt over it. So, of course, if water gets in there, it's going to erode the dirt around from whatever structures you have there. It causes a failure. In that event down there, they created some type of concrete port. And it was at an angle, so as it was manufactured, as it were to sink, it would just get tighter and tighter as it would sink into the ground. Although it might have been overkill for that. Is there any appetite of using anything like that to repair the highway down below?
No, not really. I mean, because not just the mine shaft, but the material around it, it's not stable. And I think, you know, you're taking a chance, and I don't have the comfort level that something like that will work. We've tried various methods. We've repaired that hole, that shaft, different times over the last 40, 50 years. And, you know, from a comfort level, safety level, it's, like Mr. Griswold said, it's far better to put it on solid rock, solid known material that can sustain a safe roadway.
Okay. Well, as I read in the local newspaper in this last edition, I think that maybe you were interviewed by the paper saying that the time frame of design and build out, we're looking at months.
Correct.
In order.
Correct. I mean,
to remedy this.
Some of it's in you know, incumbent upon other regulatory agencies dealing with, you know, waters of the U.S. and other permits with NDEP. And I understand that the CMI, the mining company, has done a lot of work, prep work in advance in getting things lined out with NDEP and some other agencies. One thing that's good is that, you know, they own the property underneath the road and on both sides up on that hillside. So that really facilitates a quicker delivery of a new roadway. You know, they're very good at moving dirt as far as asphalt and geometrics and looking at vertical curves and horizontal curves and addressing drainage on the roadway. They've gotten outside help with consultants that know how to build roadways, consultants that know how, and contracting firms that can give them the information they need to build a new roadway. So to answer your question, how many months are we talking about? You know, that needs to be determined with NDOT's management higher than me. I believe we're going to have some additional meetings on that and, you know, make it hopefully get some resolution and make an understanding of what the priority is and the queue of things that we're doing. As you're aware, we're working on USA Parkway and countless projects throughout the state. I'm more concerned about this area and northwestern Nevada, but the director has to take into account the whole state. However, there are opportunities with, you know, throwing some resources at it. We can speed up.
I find sometimes the government regulations, even though I'm in government, sometimes are very time-consuming. And I was wondering if there's a way this could be fast-tracked, or, you know, because I think it's of the essence of time frame, because there's a lot of issues on this highway. It's not just a shorter commute for those who want to go to Carson City from Virginia City, but you've got livelihood involved here with people's businesses that are directly affected. Not so much Virginia City as a whole, because we still have a highway to get here up over the truck route. But you've got lodging establishments that are right at the top of the hill that maybe aren't going to be found by the public, and you've got businesses in Gold Hill, businesses in Silver City that are going to be directly affected by this. We have mutual aid agreements for safety issues with Lyon County to go ahead and with fire and ambulance service going into their county to help their residents in Silver City, things like that. All of these things come into play as very important measures that we have to look at. And so when we talk about months to design and build something, you know, we know that in emergency situations, the Army Corps of Engineers can build stuff almost overnight.
So that being said, Commissioner, I think that, you know, given the priority, it can be done quite quickly. What's that number? How many months? I can't say. We have some things in our favor. We have the mining company that's here. They can move dirt very quickly, go into the hillside. You know, we're looking at doing as a permit which is, you know, a lot quicker. But I definitely want to involve some headquarter folks that are experts in the design of roadways. They'll be reviewing what's been going to be submitted. If this is the direction Story County wants to go, and NDOT wants to go, and the mining company want to go, because it's really truly a three-way partnership, their property, your county, the roadway that we're supposed to maintain for safety. Once we can get all that together, you know, it'd be nice to have it done before tour season. I'm one of those guys that likes to ride bicycles up and down Geiger Grade. And that's one of the roads that I like to go down and then come back up the truck route and head back to Reno. So from a personal standpoint, I'd like to see that open too.
I think the county manager, you wanted to get a word in there?
If I may, just a couple of questions before. First, thank you to both the CMI team and especially to the NDOT team for changing your schedules on very short notice. I mean, when we knew of this and determined we better get you on the agenda and get you on quickly, you guys really jockeyed everything around. I appreciate you arranging for a meeting later this afternoon with Vice Chairman Gilman in Austin to meet with the director and yourself. my question would simply be, assuming we move the road east, that is the best plan, and that Comstock Mining is willing to participate, you know, for their portion, and of course it's, I see it as an NDOT project, if you will, is NDOT still willing to accept and maintain the newly relocated SR-342 to the same levels that they have the existing road? Will you, either through prescriptive easement or through maintenance easement or through something similar, would you continue to maintain that road?
I would think so, yes. It doesn't make sense for us to plow down to the closure or to the roadway that we have prescriptive right on and then turn around and go back up. We don't like to do that. Or same from the bottom. It's much smoother if we can have a continuous flow. If we're going to be plowing it and maintaining it, I would just as soon have that prescriptive right from Silver City all the way to our maintenance station. So, but that's a little bit higher than my pay grade, and I think this afternoon's meeting we can discuss some of those concerns you brought up.
Perfect. Thank you.
In any case, I see the need to at least get some kind of bypass so we can keep that road open during all of this. I can't see keeping it closed.
Okay, so that's a good point. I think we need to certainly get some discussions going on with CMI. Since we don't own that property, they want to put the road there. They're moving the prescriptive right or location of where we're supposed to go. You know, I just want to make sure that it's going to be safe with, you know, their mining activity, the bypass, the temporary shoe fly, however you want to call it, that it's not going to fail, you know, either on its own or on a weather-related event.
Anything else?
I think a lot more to come.
Yeah.
We haven't been in this very long. I know everybody's working for a solution. Certainly, if we had a magic wand, we'd have a bypass very quickly and keep the road up open on an interim basis while we did a new bypass piece. So if we can come to something that works that way, I hope all of you can noodle on it and find us a solution.
I don't know if you want to comment. The CMI
want to? Yeah, I just want to comment on that for the record, Ken, again. The cracks that have perpetuated, they extend pretty much through the extent of the dumps all the way over to Gold Canyon Creek. So this idea of putting the bypass there, I'm not going to say that it's, you know, it has a risk, right? So we would have to evaluate that, and I don't want to speak for Mike, but I think you would want a geotechnical evaluation done for the material that's under it. Thanks.
Mike contacted the Army Corps of Engineers because they do have portable bridges. I mean, when the Carson River knocked out the bridge in weeks, within a few weeks they had a bridge in there until they got the funding to build a permanent bridge. And that's another alternative.
Yeah, so the idea of the bridge is The only reservation I have about that is the material that you would set the bridge on for the abutments.
We've got some residents are here that have some questions. Would you mind staying up there? We'll take public comment, and I'll ask those members, those residents who want to ask questions, to direct those to the board. And then at that time, we'll direct either to Comstock Mining or to NDOT for response on it, okay? We don't want to get in a dialogue back and forth with members, okay? So we will have a limit of 3 minutes per person who would ever like to speak. And as you approach the podium, if you'll identify yourself for the record and ask your question to the board.
Good morning. My name is Gail Sherman. I'm here on behalf of the Comstock Residents Association. Sometime in 2014, Comstock Mining opened a historic shaft into the southeastern portion of the Lucerne Pit. In a teleconference call to CMI shareholders on January 29th of this year, Corrado De Gasperis was asked about this opening. Corrado asked his shareholders to imagine they were standing in the Lucerne Pit looking east at a wall that is, quote, literally right up against the state route, and there is a big ass hole in the wall, end quote. He was describing the shaft opening in the east wall of the pit. He stated that CMI had plans to place drill rigs in the shaft and, quote, drill from underneath. He spoke of his plans to move Highway 342. From my observations, the subsidence and cracking of the road happened after CMI opened the shaft in the east wall of the pit. The tape of this teleconference is posted on the CMI website. My first question is, if NDOT, Story County, and CMI all knew this area was problematic in the past, why would CMI open the shaft, undermine the road, and then be surprised that this caused instability? Everyone is culpable in this situation, Story County, NDOT, and CMI. But since CMI and NDOT are saying that CMI is not at fault, my second question is, who is going to pay for this? The answer, of course, is Nevada taxpayers and Virginia City merchants and business community. Virtually the same situation occurred in 1981 at the Grinders Bend Houston pit. Apparently, decision makers haven't learned from past mistakes. Because CMI successfully hid the full extent of the pit from anyone traveling on the road, no one knew how deep and precipitous it really is. Any person of normal intelligence looking at the picture of the pit would have concerns about road safety. For those of us who have lived here long enough to see mining companies come and go, NDOT and CMI's dismissive assessments that road instability is due exclusively to rain and old shafts are patronizing and insulting. Since we now know the road is unsafe and has been for a long time, my third question is, how will the road be located? Mining in CMI's chute zone prevents easterly relocation, and the gaping Lucerne pit is on the west side. Luckily, no one was hurt. Tourists, families, children, commuters, public safety vehicles have been traveling that road without knowing how unsafe it really is. We trusted state and local officials to protect us. My fourth and final question is, how can we be assured that any action or pronouncement coming from NDOT, Story County, or CMI is the full and complete story so we can make informed decisions about what is safe and what isn't? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sherman. Scott, would you like to respond?
Yes, I would. Scott Jalk over Comstock Mining. That's a pretty good description of what was said in the conference call. But what's missing is that the shaft that Ms. Sherman is speaking about is a decline, and it's 120 feet north of this failure. Number one, we didn't open it. In mining terms, as we mined in the pit, it opened. I don't have to tell you guys how many times you drive up and down this hill and you see different adits in the walls along both sides of 342. So simply place yourself down into the pit you're mining your benches with your mine plan as you go down, and up pops an adit that goes in and under the road into the old Donovan shaft. We didn't open up anything. We simply put a culvert in to protect what's there with a door on it to keep public or personnel out that would possibly come in and trespass in the pit if there's nobody there for public safety. And what we learned was that it is caved 100 feet in, but it could become a good potential drill station for underground mining. And that drilling is drilling that instead of coming from the surface, and you have to start at the surface and go down a few hundred feet, now you're already well below the roadway and underground. But it has no impact, no bearing on the situation that we're talking about. Thank you.
Who would else like to speak? Ms. Carby?
Just one quick, Robin Cobby Gold Hill, one quick question. Did I understand this correctly that they would mine the east side first and then put the road in? So we wait until your mining activity is finished to get the road?
Yeah, that's the idea is... Yeah.
Mine first, then put the road in. That's a long time.
No, the idea is to remove the old dump material that the road currently sits on so that we can rebuild the structural section that's sufficient to support it.
Okay. I have a list here of about eight residents in Silver City who have felt anything from, who have felt the blast for windows rattling, furniture rattling, pictures falling off the shelves or off the wall and breaking, to somebody whose house actually shifted and she can't open her back door anymore. These are 100 yards from the pit. You've been describing this unstable shaft that's, you know, ready to fall down at any minute. Why aren't you talking about what the impact of the blasting, the heavy equipment, the drilling, the rumbling, what does that have to do with the stability of the shaft and the road? That doesn't impact it at all? Hello? Anybody?
Yeah.
So, when you're done.
Are you finished?
Yeah.
I'd like to have Elaine and Rick come up to stand if we prepared some slides to discuss the blast.
While they're working on getting our slides to functioning, for the record, Rick Martin, Director of Risk Management for Comstock Mining. In regards to the impact of any of our blasting activities, we've shared this before, but we have deployed a large array of seismic monitors with which we have very concrete scientific data about the seismic impact of our activities. And the concept that those activities are impacting in a negative way either the structural integrity of the highway or the other residences simply can't be sustained by the factual evidence. When you look at the seismic activity of most of our shots, they are only registering on one of our four permanent and one mobile seismic monitor. So given the geology of the rock material, the size and the seismic impact, it simply doesn't transmit to those directions. I would point out a couple of things for everyone's edification. We know from the U.S. Bureau of Mines what kind of velocities and what kind of seismic activity is sufficient to move foundations or to shake walls. And I would point out on this slide, the top one is one of our shots given in 2014, but you will notice that the peak velocities and the decibels, 102, and then all of those below that. Now, this is the Devil's Gate seismic monitor, which would be closest to the Silver City area. All of those seismic events below that, that are in black, had nothing to do with our mine. They were either earthquake activity or other seismic events not related to our activity. And you can see all of those are of greater magnitude than our seismic activity that's generated by mining. So, again, it simply can't hold up to scrutiny when it comes to the blasts impacting the road surface or the residences. Again, we have a shot that was done on January 7th of this year, generating, you know, what we call a frequency of 108 decibels. All of those below that are, again, non-Comstock-related seismic events, and all of which are far greater than our impact. So I think we need to be very careful of painting a picture that our blasting activities, and particularly as this pit has declined and gotten deeper, the size of our shots have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller just due to the constraints of the physical area where we're simply doing our blasting. So it doesn't bear up under real scrutiny. I pulled up today our seismic monitoring stations. We tie them to both the UNR seismic activity and California seismic activity. But I would share with everybody that for the last calendar year in Nevada, well, we've had over 4,000 seismic events. Today, meaning the last 24 hours, we've had 18 seismic events. And in our area, we've had in excess of 400 seismic events, all of which are below our usual threshold of feeling, but they certainly register and can be impacting foundations and other things on there. So I think the simple answer is no. The shots that we have been doing have had no detrimental effect on either the roadway or the other residences in the nearby area. And we're very consistent in our monitoring and can show in detail that they fall far below any threshold. Now, I would never challenge that people's pictures have fallen off the walls. They may have. What I can say with a high degree of confidence is it wasn't due to any activity from the blasting at Comstock Mining.
Any questions? I don't have any questions for you. Mr. Dyson, does NDOT have any evidence that any of this blasting has had any effect on the continued failure on this shaft?
I'm not that I'm aware of, Mike.
We have not done any monitoring ourselves, no.
Okay. One of the other questions, the follow-up would be that Ms. Sherman posed, and this could be posed to both Comstock Mining and NDOT, is for the realignment of this highway or whatever needs to be done, who's going to pay for it?
Well, again, Thor Dyson with NDOT. We are going to work with the mining company to move the road. I think it's incumbent upon them to move it. So with your concurrence and special use permit that you've got with them, we're going to treat it like a permit that they want to move the roadway. Again, we don't own anything around there. We just have the prescriptive right to maintain the asphalt that's through there, and we maintain it. I'm going to maintain whatever roads out there, provided that it's safe. I have staff to maintain it. We maintain through town, C Street. We maintain all the way to US 50. So the actual costs, you know, we have engineers on staff to review what they want to submit. I'm going to let Comstock answer, you know, the expenses of relocating the road.
Okay, Mr. Joelcover.
So fortunately, Scott Joelcover for Comstock Mining, I am also blessed with that's above my pay grade. But we will definitely get back to you with the answer on that, but I would say that it definitely points to the mining company paying for that relocation.
Thank you. All right. Who else would like to make public comment?
For the record, Larry Warnbrock from Silver City. A quick question. I believe that there is BLM property in this area, as well as Comstock Mining property. It was a little bit unclear on the slide. The proposed relocation to the east looked to me like it would cross BLM property as well as CMI property. So my question, first question would be, is that true or not?
Scott Jogover, Comstock Mining. We have given our engineering team explicit directions to design a route that would be solely on private property, exactly for the reason of expediency. But, you know, I'm sure we could look at doing something with the BLM and spending about 3 years if that's a...
Are you getting a letter? I guess they've got the microphone block partially.
More palatable way to approach the project.
Okay, then my next question would be if it's going to be solely on CMI property, then I know that a number of years back, the Department of Transportation embarked on a rather extensive program of determining the right-of-way of the highway through downtown Virginia City, in which the legal questions about right-of-way were answered. And I'm wondering that now, if the highway is going to be relocated, whether or not it would be appropriate and prudent for that right-of-way to be legally determined and that right-of-way to be given over to the state of Nevada so that this problem would not exist in the future or that there would be any question about a right-of-way in the future. Or where it is, or who's responsible for it. And I think that would be very appropriate. Maybe this afternoon in your discussions you would do it, or address that issue. If that issue is not addressed, then it seems to me like the problem is just going to crop up again and not be resolved.
Thank you. Mr. Dyson, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. The Department of Transportation, you know, we have a lot of state highways. Some of them make sense. Some of them don't. We have roadways that we're trying to relinquish and give up to cities, counties. Certainly, you know, that's an option here. Not the state doesn't have to have this highway. We've got 341. If the county wants to entertain that roadway, you know, for having the right-of-way transferred to them, it's a little bit problematic because, again, we have a prescriptive right. I think it would slow things down for the realignment of the roadway. You know, the Virginia City crew is taxed. I don't get very many maintenance personnel, temporary personnel, to help me out with snow removal. We haven't had any snowstorms in 4 or 5 years that I can remember. It's getting depressing. However, you know, we'll do our best if we end up keeping it prescriptive right. As far as taking it on as a permanent right-of-way, that really hasn't been an initiative of the state. We're in the process of relinquishing roads to cities, counties, and I know, you know, Pat, you're aware of that. But it would be in negotiations with the county if you want that. If you don't want it, you know, we'll continue to do business the way we have been, or you know, could be just privatized, I guess, but I'm guessing that, you know, the prescriptive right thing would probably still continue to be the same, and we would maintain business the same. But we're certainly open to different options. Taking on additional right-of-way, I'm not so sure that that's really what NDOT wants to do.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Mayor, Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
And Thor, I can only answer that as staff, not officially as the county, because this was not agendized as an action item. But I can tell you, at a staff level, at a maintenance level, it would be our very strong preference to continue to have you guys maintain it, either through prescriptive easement or whatever. Our county road crew and your local maintainer yard have a great working relationship together, but we really need your continued help on that stretch.
Okay. All right, we're still taking public comment. Who else would like to speak? Good morning.
John Griffin, I'm here as a resident. You know, I think it was Ben Wesner that stood up here at last meeting and said, I've lived in this community for 35 years, and I want to believe what I'm hearing. And like him, I do. And like him, I have. The elephant in the room is that the road began to get weakened because of the shaft next to it. I haven't heard a mea culpa this morning. I haven't heard, I'll do everything I can to get it fixed. I think what's needed now is a will to move beyond the rhetoric, fix the road so that we're out of the darkness here, and find a way to mend the pit so that this does not continue to exacerbate what we're experiencing. If you dig a hole straight down next to a road, the road will fail, whether there's a weather event or not. We should have anticipated this. We didn't. But I'm hopeful that going forward we can find a way to strengthen that side of the pit if the mining will continue there, and we get a permanent solution to the road. I agree with Jack McGuffey. We need some kind of interim bypass that will be safe, and we need to expedite this as quickly as possible. It is hurting people, and I'm heartened by everyone's remarks at the commissioner level and at the staff level that this is your community too. There's no easy way forward because we're in the middle of this now, but we have to work as hard as we can to address what's happened. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Who's next? Good morning.
Yeah, I'm Peter Kramer. I'm a resident. I wasn't going to say anything, but your last remarks reminded me of something. When you said, well, we have 341, so, you know, what do we need another one for? I think that we should anticipate, realistically, that I can see there's a consensus moving toward taking the road over and putting it on solid ground, which has a certain appeal to it. If you disregard the fact that people have been trying to mine where that road is for the last 100 years, the problematic thing I can see developing is you agree to move the road over to the east side. The mining company says, we'll do the cut, we can do this, but of course it depends on getting the other stuff out of the way so we can be sure we're on solid ground, at which point they commence to mine in the area they've been wanting to mine anyway. And they mine as far as they can, and then they say, oh, well, the road is not really feasible. We've discovered that we can't put the road over there, largely because we want to keep on mining. What they basically would like would be you come through Devil's Gate and you've got a hole that goes out to the sides, really tight, fairly far. You're going to have a cliff on the east side by the time they, you know, for one thing, they'll delay putting that road in until they find out whether they've got all the material that they're trying to get. So the object would be, I think, if there's going to be any kind of compromise, what should be done is they should do the road first and fast, because it economically would be a disaster for Virginia City to have that road shut down. Tourists are not going to drive the truck route. They're scared to death. It doesn't have any guardrails, for starters. And maybe it's only an hour and a mile and a half longer, but everybody feels like it's 5 miles longer because it's boring. I mean, people like to come into Virginia City through Silver City and Gold Hill. It has a historic feel to it, and its road feels safe. People are not, they might take it once because they're anxious to get Virginia City, but they won't like it and they won't do it again. And this will affect things like restaurants, not just businesses in Gold Hill, but the whole of Virginia City. Half the tourist population will stop coming, especially the ones from Tahoe who come that way. So I think having a nice, solid, permanent road is a nice idea. So let's have it first before they mine. Because if we let them mine their way up to where they're going to put the road, that'll take quite a while. And subsequently, they'll suddenly discover they can't put a road there because you know full well that ore body continues on at a 45-degree angle or whatever it is, and it goes right under the next mountain. And they want to do to that mountain what they did to the one on the west side. It looks obvious to me, and I bet you're smiling because you know it. That's it.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Okay. Who would like to speak next? Come on up, sir. Good morning.
My name is Steve Phillips. I live in Gold Hill.
If you repeat it again now, you've got a mic.
My name is Steve Phillips. I live in Gold Hill. Okay, my concern is we only have one way in and out now in Gold Hill. And I think you have 70 residents in Gold Hill. Let's say there's an event. Let's say there's a derailment of the train where it crosses 342. Or a truck is going to deliver propane, and it turns over. How do we get in and out?
Well, we are set up to go ahead and have emergency personnel come in and out of there, even with the road closed right now.
On the north side?
Both sides.
So if that side got closed off, if there was a train and it derailed, how would the residents get out of Gold Hill?
Go ahead.
And again, I look both to CMI and NDOT, but that has been a major concern of ours for both Gold Hill and Silver City. And we've been assured by both NDOT and CMI that there are provisions that would at least allow emergency vehicles to get through on literally what I believe would be the eastern lanes, not over the current shaft as it's apparently known. So we could get our equipment down below the blockage into Silver City and back, and I would presume looking to Sheriff Antonaro, who's in charge of search and rescue for any type of evacuation, that we would have those same access opportunities if we needed to evacuate Gold Hill.
Okay, is the sheriff on board with this? I mean, if we got cut off there, if the train derailed right there at the train tracks where we crossed the road, the train derailed, what would happen to the residents? I mean, maybe emergency we could get them out of there, but then what? Do you get my point? Okay, so that's my point. Another point is, can you look me in the eye and say that the mining company had nothing to do with this problem on the roadway?
So, Thorne,
a question.
So, Thorne,
but in the future, please address the board with your questions, okay. And then we will have whoever is the responsible party go ahead and respond to your question. Okay.
So, can I, by proxy, divert that question from you?
Yes.
To this gentleman?
Yes. Thank you. Okay.
So, Thor Dyson, NDOT district engineer. Essentially, I closed the road because I had concerns about the mine shaft. I had concerns about public safety. I'm not a geotechnical engineer. I'm not going to answer that question. The reason is I'm concerned about the asphalt, the permitting activity, both sides of the road. It's not really my realm. I do know that the road has failed previously. I've seen it in 2005, 2006. I've heard about it from other NDOT maintenance personnel. And that failure of the roadway has occurred prior to any mining activity. Did this mining activity do that? I'm not an expert to say that that is the case. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay. My concern is we're going to get into, actually, NDOT and the mining company are going to get into an arm wrestling contest, and the residents are going to suffer because of that. You know, we just need to get it fixed. I mean, we got here the way we got here, and now we just got a problem. We need to get it fixed so that we can get back and forth.
We all agree with you on that.
And I do believe that NDOT has accepted a certain amount of liability by repairing that before. I mean, if they were going to draw a line and say, let's get rid of the road or let's have the mining company move the road, they should have said that in 2006 instead of putting a patch on it. So if they put a patch on it, they've accepted liability. So let's move forward. Whose road is it? It's their road. They need to maintain it.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm done.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Mm-hmm. All right. I saw someone else had their hand up out here. Anyone else?
Sheriff,
come on up.
Jerry Antonoro, Story County Sheriff and Gold Hill resident, so it affects me also. I just wanted to speak to a couple of the concerns that were voiced. If there were some type of an emergency, train derailment, something like that, we would get people in and out either through the portion of the road that's not coned off or through the emergency bypass or anything. One of the concerns that I've been faced with by a number of people since the closure is people on foot, people on bicycles, and I guess that would be something Thor can weigh in on if he wants to, but we all understand the hazards that are imposed by vehicle traffic going in and out of there. Short of an active construction project going on, I don't see a whole good reason to keep people, pedestrians, or bicycles out of there because, that's part of our economy, part of our tourist base. Even like Thor said, he rides his bicycle back and forth through there. Of course, we don't want people going through an active construction zone where they're going to be hurt. But if the road is just sitting there waiting for designs, waiting for plans, is there an issue with people walking or pedaling through there? From a safety standpoint, I don't see a problem.
Okay. Thank you, Sheriff. I have another question for you, Mr. Dyson. Is there concern with the whole highway itself or just the one half of the highway that where we're seeing the dip in the road?
Well, I'm concerned about all sections of highway through all western Nevada, northwestern Nevada. But on this particular section, I'm concerned with some of the cracks that have developed, both, in the area of the shaft and other areas next to the shaft or above or below. I'm also concerned with future-related weather events that are coming up to open, close. That's somewhat of a concern as well.
With that being said, my question could be, since the mine has personnel working there, stopping people from driving through unless they're residents of that, could that manpower be better utilized for flagmen at the site so the road could still stay open and just flag them around on the one lane that doesn't seem to be damaged?
That's an option. I'm going to defer that to CMI if they want to do that. It's a heck of a lot cleaner and less issues involved. And we have lots of construction projects throughout my area alone, and we ask bicyclists and we ask pedestrians and other motorists not to travel through an active work zone, or we specifically will design something so that they're not going to be mixed up with heavy construction equipment. In this case, it would be mining equipment. So, it's kind of a unique animal because we don't own anything around it, just keeping the road safe and making sure that the public is safe on that asphalt, but we really don't own underneath and anything around it.
Let me follow up. I want to make sure I understand. If I understand, the road is impacted in one lane, not both. So would you be willing to allow the one lane to open if it were managed with flaggers and things?
You know,
in that area?
I'm not. I've seen too many failures. If it's opened up to one lane and a heavy load comes through there and something happens, then what? So I'm going to defer. Mr. Griswold wants to talk, but I'm not comfortable opening it up. If I'm directed to open it up, okay, but I'm not comfortable personally, even on the one lane. If something were to happen, I wouldn't be sleeping very well at night for a long time.
I just wanted to state really quickly just a concern. What we're seeing now is a settlement in a fairly confined area. As you can see in 2006, I don't know if there was any settlement that started occurring during that episode, but it opened up into a very large hole. What's settling now may just be the very start of a collapse, and that collapse can drop open very quickly to a much larger size and encompass both sides of the road. So there is a distinct concern for safety for pedestrians, bicycles, and vehicles, in my opinion.
The question would be, though, that if it's manned 24 hours a day,
you don't know when it's going to collapse and how big it's going to collapse and in what instance. Whether it collapses and erodes away slowly or quickly. The story about Alvey, that occurred in the night when pouring rain. And from my understanding, he had just come through there with his plow, turned around on the lower side, and was coming back up, and had just driven through that section. Nothing had happened, and when he came back up, he saw a black hole in the black darkness for unbelievably that he did not drive smack dab into that. But a situation where the road was perfectly fine, 3 minutes later, when he turned around and came back up, it was completely collapsed. So, words of caution.
Mr. Ducko, do you find it, would it be feasible maybe to, let's do a quick roundabout, or not a roundabout, just a detour around that spot towards the canyon wall where you want to build a proposed road and just make it something that goes around that pit, that shaft, just temporary, and then you can just migrate the road into that?
We have done that for emergency vehicles right now. As a matter of fact, it's being graveled this morning as we speak, but I don't know that the mining company nor NDOT has enough intelligence to know that that's a solution to commit to today. Is it a possibility, and can we look at it geotechnically and derive an answer and an outcome? Absolutely. And is that one of the possibilities for solution, temporary solution? Absolutely. And I think both the county and NDOT and the mining company have been dancing absolutely as fast as they can, because the solution to this is everybody's win. The good news is there is a special use permit for moving the road in this area. The good news is NDOT's fully cooperative. What we don't know yet is for sure all the geotechnical engineering that has to be discovered and whether or not there are other agencies that are going to come into play on this. So to that end, we are working together collaboratively for a solution.
Do you have a time frame as a kind of a go-forward solution?
As I spoke earlier, we have just received a potential alignment from our engineers that we believe, but we have to do the research to make sure it's 100% on private land. We have to sit down with NDOT. We can't solve this in this meeting. Not a chance. Not a chance. But we're working as fast as possible to come up with a plan that obviously NDOT, the mining company that does own that area other than the asphalt, and the county all agree to in the quickest amount of time that's humanly possible.
Well, I too would like to see some type of bypass done, you know, the most expedient way that we can, just to get the road back open while the long-term solution of realigning a highway.
And to that end, we just need to make sure that that is every bit as safe.
Exactly.
As
that's why I'm trying out some other scenarios to see if they would work. You know, I'm not an engineer. I don't suppose to be. So, is anyone else? Oh. Mr. McCarthy. Just identify yourself for the record.
My name is Joe McCarthy. I'm a resident of Silver City. A lot of speculation going on here. I appreciate all the work that you're doing and trying to ask the hard questions in a difficult situation. I want to add to the record that the company that is participating in this collaborative effort has lost money for 27 straight quarters. I think you have to factor that in is whether they have the resources to actually participate in a way that the Nevada taxpayers or at least their work is mitigated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Anyone else in the audience like to speak? We only do it once per cycle. Maybe the person sitting next to you would like to speak later. Anyone else? Okay, before we move on, I'd like to thank CMI for attending today, gentlemen, with your presentation, your slideshow. We all know we need to work on this expeditiously. And Mr. Dyson, NDOT, we've always had a great working relationship, Story County and NDOT has, and we appreciate you, gentlemen, Mr. Quizzle, for being here today. We just have to push hard and fast on this to get a remedy for it for the community and our visitors as well, since I think that side of the road gets more traffic than Geiger Gray does, so I think it's very important that we get this thing repaired as quickly as possible. Commissioners, may
I? Agreed. If I may add just one last thing. Again, the public, and I don't want to speak for CMI because I think they helped organize this, but the public, everyone, is invited on the tour tomorrow. It begins at 9:30 at the Fourth Ward School. There will be probably a quorum of the county commissioners. We posted it as a public meeting, although no actions will be taken. But I encourage you all to join us and see things down there.
Okay. That's all. Did you bring up that tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's going to conclude this item, number 9. We're going to go ahead and we'll probably put this on the upcoming the next agenda. We're going to follow up on this probably each and every meeting to go ahead and find out where we stand and the progress that's being made. At this time, let's go ahead and take about a 10-minute recess, and we'll be right back.